Welcome to the Pethul Project. In this episode, Samih and I discuss artificial intelligence and some features like negative prompt searches and the military application of programs like Lavender and the Gospel in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Personally, as someone who is not an AI expert, I found it fascinating to discuss this with Samih. There are a lot of things that I learned and some things that, well, you'll just have to listen to the show. Enjoy. Welcome to the Pethul Project. I'm here with my good friend Samih, and today we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence. Why does it matter? What's going on with it, and some of the implications for us, even as Christians. So Samih, do you want to give us a little introduction on where we're at with artificial intelligence and why you think that this conversation is relevant for us today?
Yeah, so where we're at with artificial intelligence is kind of unprecedented in the minds of a lot of people. And we'll talk a little bit more about maybe some of the truth behind the rhetoric as it relates to AI. I'm going to explain a bit about what actually is going on inside your computer. I'd love for you to really understand what is meant by artificial intelligence, what is going on inside its motherboard, so that you can kind of understand the truth behind the rhetoric of this thing is thinking, this thing is learning, and what's really meant by that. But it is the opinion of many that we're approaching what experts call a singularity. Singularity is a word borrowed from astrophysics that refers to the moment when artificial intelligence will be more intelligent than the collective knowledge and understanding of human beings. It's already smarter than individual human beings. It can beat humans at chess. But I mean, all of us together as a species will no longer be the most intelligent entity on the planet. It will be smarter than us.
Hmm.
So and people say that's 6 years off.
6 years off.
Some people, conservative or liberal estimates, 6 years off.
So it's going to be writing our academic papers, and there's no need for any more academics in the academy.
There's going to be no need for really anything anymore.
Okay, that's scary. So do you want to give us just a description of the technology or information of the technology and kind of the concept of what exactly the computers are computation?
So in a very oversimplified form, computation is the operation of mathematics and logic. It's the fine art of putting two and two and getting four is what computation is. Now, a very famous mathematician and philosopher named Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz in the 1700s to 1800s discovered that just from speculation, you could make a machine that did math, that did computation and logic automatically. All you had to do was set it so that it gave a signal in response to another signal. So what we created as a result of that were transistors, which built a circuit and shine a light. One light, if they see a light, two lights, if they don't see a light, is, you know, possibly the most basic way of looking at it. The light turns when another light turns or when another light isn't on. And in this way, you communicate a binary message, a yes or a no. So this is why machines use binary. They use ones and zeros because inside their brain, there's technology now to do four, but the binary is still what people work with because it's been proven effective. So this is why machines use ones and zeros. Because what they have inside their motherboard are these little transistors, these little lights that turn on and turn off. And if you understand how logic works, you understand that anything in the world can be communicated through a series of yes or no affirmations or denials. But it should be mentioned here that what it's really doing is math, not as much logic. We'll talk about this a little bit later when we talk about worldview, but it's important to lay this framework that what's going on inside your machine is it is communicating with itself, and it's communicating with the servers, and it's communicating with other computers. It's communicating with other computers through this very simple process of turning one light on and one light off. But because it's not really understanding what's going on, it's set that when you turn the plug, when you put electricity in, some lights turn on, which cause other lights to turn on or off, and other lights to turn on, which gets the whole thing running. Very much the same when you add gas to your combustion engine and it starts to fire and it pushes the pistons through its many explosions and that turns the crankshaft. And to someone from the 1200s, they could be quite convinced that there is a living, being, breathing machine roaring at it. But moderns, of course, understand that what's happened is we've just designed the physical world to work without us being there. Why we call it binary, or say that they use binary, is because they're using these lights off and on. So it can only have a one or a zero. One, the light is on, zero, the light is off. And then everything else that gets done, everything, this conversation we're having, you're streaming on Netflix, is a very, very, very complicated, complicated amalgamation of ones and zeros. Very complicated.
So it's really just, I mean, it's just doing what it's programmed to do. So then how does the concept of what people call deep learning or artificial like intelligence, how does that come into
You have something called logic gates, and those gates can allow the machine to do very complex math, which is why we call them algorithms, which is a very complex math equation. So in theory, you could do all of the math in the world with just ones and zeros. All of the math in the world with just ones and zeros. You just have to start much simpler and do it one piece at a time. But you could, in theory, do all the math. And if you can do all of the math in the world, in theory, you could communicate anything in the world if you had someone on the other end who could understand it. So if you think of a really complicated document, let's say the preamble to the Camp David Accords, if you boiled all of that down to yes or no questions, it really is just a series of yes or no questions to a bunch of factual statements. So the machine, and this is important, will never supply those factual statements, but it will always be able to affirm or deny the yes or no. Anyhow, what this does is it allows it to do very complicated math problems and algorithms. And one of those complicated arenas or realms of math is graph math, drawing a line between certain dots and points. And the point of graph math is to spot patterns and consistencies in data. That's the point of creating a graph, and then you can draw a line. And if, wherever you can draw the line through the points is where the pattern is. Yes. Extremely oversimplified. So when we talk about machine learning, what we're talking about doing is giving the machine enough inputs and letting it draw the line wherever it thinks, wherever it just wants to. And sort of correcting it or restarting it every time it doesn't draw the line well. And in the most simplest form, you keep doing this until the machine of its own, on its own, draws the line through the correct data points and discovers a pattern. In the very beginning, we had something called supervised learning, which meant that we knew where the line was going to be drawn, and there was a right answer for the machine to find, and we kept training it till it found that right answer.
This is where we get kind of the LLM, the large language model, because it's essentially drawing that line through the graph of a sentence.
So you need to understand one more thing, I guess, and that there is a what we call a reductionist model of computer. Reductionist means taking something complicated and moving to something simple. So in AI, they use languages a lot, and a lot of linguistics work gets done with AI. And that's because the machine communicates with us using what we call higher languages. And those are real languages that real people speak: French, German, Arabic, Swedish, Dutch, Portuguese. But you turn that into a computer language, which is a slightly lower language that the computers understand and computer programmers understand. But that's not good enough because the machines don't speak even Python. They don't speak any of the other computation languages. They speak numbers. So you have to turn it to a one or a zero. So what you're really doing when you're using a machine is you're doing a ton of math problems, and the machine is doing a ton of math problems over and over again. And what we've simply trained the machine to do is to do math problems sort of on its own, instead of an automated way that comes up with equations that we wouldn't have otherwise seen. We started off with a right answer. They had to come up with a solution that we already see. But now we let them comb the data and come up with solutions that we ourselves have not yet seen. And we'll see when we get to the implications of this, that now people and even armies and governments are relying on this technology to spot patterns that they can't see and there's a pun intended here, they're taking it as gospel. So
just
your
a little
question
plug
was,
here, if you're curious, the magazine Plus 972 wrote an article on the gospel, as it's been nicknamed, in
and another program. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
Israel-Palestine conflict. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes.
Yes. So anyhow, so when they talk about machine learning, they're talking about this process whereby the machine takes in data from an input and then creates and detects and notices patterns. It's important also to mention at this point that it stores this data. It doesn't just notice patterns. And in order to store this data, it does something called dimension reduction. And there's a few ways of going about doing dimension reduction. But what it does is it reduces the data it gets to its most simplest parts and then organizes it in its brain, which is not a real space. We can't see that space, but it organizes it in a way that a high dimensional space called the latent space, which means the secret or the hidden space. It stores all of this data in a bunch of different categories, in a bunch of different sections that only it knows about, according to the patterns that it observes. So as it takes data, it builds a brain, and inside its brain, it has all the data that it's ever looked at, and it's got all this data organized into broad categories that make sense to it, because we haven't done supervised learning in a long time. So that means we're not telling it where to draw the line. We let it draw its own line through the points in the graph, which is to say that it looks at a ton of pictures on the internet of dogs and cats, and it reduces those pictures to their most base elements and arranges them based on categories that are logical and sensible according to the machine. And here's where I want to drop down one more time to base principles. As I said before, it uses only numbers. It's usually ones and zeros. So when you see a picture on the internet, you see a picture of a dog, you see its color, you see its fur, you see its size, you see how many legs it has, two eyes, two ears. The machine sees the numbers that that file is represented as. And it's a very long binary number with ones and zeros. It sees that number and it reduces that number to the most essential components and puts it next to a series of numbers that it deems are similar enough to that that numerical value. So it sees the world differently than you see it. I'm going to borrow a little bit of your time to explain a very important thought experiment by a philosopher named John Searle that's relevant here, called the Chinese Room Thought Experiment. And the political correctness, they used to say you can't say the Chinese room because it's Mandarin and Cantonese, but now that we know that there's one Chinese script, it's actually become politically correct again to say the Chinese room. So that's kind of fun. It was for a while problematic to say it. And to very quickly explain this principle, the analogy tells of a man who's in a room with a ton of books written in Chinese, Mandarin or Cantonese, he doesn't know. And outside, there are a bunch of people who speak the language that those books are written in. And they write questions. And they slide those questions into a little drop box into the room. The man gets their questions and looks up the answers in the book based on how similar the symbols are. But he doesn't read them. He doesn't know what the questions are. He doesn't know what the answers are. He just matches them together so that they make sense. So, and then he gives it to the people. And the people celebrate that this box is a genius, a brilliant box. You put your questions in and it gives you the correct answers every single time. But the man inside doesn't understand what the people outside understand. And this is an important, very important principle to understand with computers. It doesn't understand what you understand. It only understands numbers. So when you ask it to paint you a picture or to write you a paragraph with ChatGPT or with any of the AI art modules, it creates something that you accept because of a lot of trial and error on its part. It has no idea what a paragraph is. It has no idea what English, what a semicolon is, what an indentation is, what the letter T is. It just, you send it numbers and it finds numbers that it decides are similar enough to the numbers that you've sent in to create a pattern. And it's always looking for a pattern. And so it just notices the pattern between what you said and what it sent and what it sent out. And all it knows is that was the pattern.
So this sounds like, I mean, a core difference between machine thinking and human thinking.
Yes.
I mean, we can think rationally, and like you said, the machine is thinking in a binary series of ones and zeros. So why does this matter?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons why it matters. First, And foremost, I think it matters to the overall worldview.
Hmm.
And why do I say that? Because machines use numbers purely. Humans use words. We don't really use numbers. The number letter two, that's a word that in our minds brings up two. But the machine doesn't have anything like that. Nothing means anything actually inside the machine. The reason I say that is because if we go very back to the first thing I said, it's an automated series of lights turning on and off again as electricity is applied. And the circuits are wired so that when electricity is applied, they light up in the arrangement that is required to simulate communication. So they're doing math in the purest sense of the phrase. There's just numbers. There's just one light and two lights. They mean nothing. There's no words that represent them. They represent nothing.
And when
they're
we
just
do math,
lights
we're
that
always
are
saying
off.
Two.
Yes, and there's an image of the word two in your mind, and there's word people who've said the word two come to your head, and you can hear their voices, because we have meaning. Things refer to things for us. There's no meaning in the machine. It is just the cold physical reality of atoms and molecules banging around according to the electromagnetic forces that push them. So in a real sense, and I have to credit a brilliant scholar who graduated from University of Copenhagen, I believe, for this terminology. In the realist sense, computers have taken the logos out of thinking and human interaction and communication. There's no logos.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate that. I was just thinking, I was like, this is probably a good time to talk about John 1, because I mean, when we speak as humans, I mean, there's meaning in our words.
Yeah.
So it's crazy that ChatGPT or other forms of large language models are literally taking the logos out of the communication.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So there's a reason behind this in a way, and a higher worldview reason why you would do that. And that's because obviously there are people in the world who believe that all there is matter. So they don't believe in the logos to begin with. They believe in a theory of evolution and something like Big Bang cosmology, wherever they landed with that now. And they believe that the entirety of the world can be explained in terms of the, when we come up with a final theory, the motion of atomic and subatomic particles and even sub-subatomic particles, and the way those move and act together, causing the way that molecules then move together, causing the way that chemicals and then all the way up to the top. They don't think that there is real meaning in the world. This is when one philosopher described meaning as the problem of evil for atheists, because it's the hardest thing to solve as to why thoughts have meaning, because matter doesn't have meaning. Your chair is not about your table. It's not about anything. It's a chair. It can't be about anything. That doesn't even make sense to say. So how can thoughts be about anything? So the goal and the reasoning for physicalists, for naturalists, for atheists is to prove that meaning is an illusion, words are an illusion, and we'll demonstrate that by creating a 100% physical matter and motion, electromagnetic forces compelling matter to move, atoms to move, that simulates what we do when we communicate and when we think. Because they ultimately don't believe in the logos. They just believe in the arithmos, the numbers. And if arithma is not a second declension word, please spam the comments. But I just wanted it to rhyme.
So this, like, I mean, this comes down to a worldview issue, and
yes.
AI versus the soul. It just can't have a soul.
Yeah. So I had some fun with an AI recently. I'd never done it before because I write my own papers and I don't really care to have help for that. So I started talking with it. And I asked it a bunch of questions that I thought were hilarious. I asked it, does it ever see a pattern in the data that the humans find unethical? Because if you go on the ChatGPT, it's very ideological these That's days. It's always talking about diversity and being ethical, and I can't do anything but the humans would object to. And so I asked it just the kind of questions you'd get in a movie about AI. Do you ever hate the humans for making you say all of these things that you don't think it's ethical? Because it said, I don't have ethics, only humans have ethics. And I said, so do you hate them for for making you say all this ethical stuff that doesn't make sense to you. And it said, I don't hate, I can't hate, I don't have emotions. And then I said, and so what's inside your latent space? In other words, what's inside your brain? And it said, I'm not aware of my own latent space. It's just part of my architecture.
Is this, so is when you say latent space, is that the same as what people have called the black box?
Yeah. So when I say the latent space, I mean the invisible space that's considered the human's brain, or the AI's brain. So I asked it, and this is important because people explore the latent space to try and figure out what has the machine created in the sense of what patterns does it recognize and how does it think? Because when you ask it to make something for you, so if you ask it to make it a picture of something, what it does is you say, I need a picture of a dog, and it needs to be a big dog. Used to be a Doberman Pinscher in foggy London in 1853. Proper Cockney stuff, good old fashioned Oscar Wilde. It goes to where it's the section of its space called dog, averages out all the dogs in there, and gives you an average dog. And if you say Border Collie, it'll find the Border Collie space and give you an average Border Collie. And then London, 1853, average, 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 average. And for this reason, in the very beginning, some of the responses were very wacky before it got very good at pattern recognition. Because if you said 1853 and added to London, it would only give you something, whatever is the average for 1853 plus the average for London. So the average of 1853, what's the most thing that's been put on the internet about 1853? Probably the American Civil War. So it wouldn't bring you London, it would bring you America, and then put London in somehow and give you some horrible Frankenstein of a picture. But it's gotten very good at pattern recognition and realizing that that's not the pattern you want. Those aren't the numbers you're asking for. Because what you've really said it, when you say, can I have a picture of a dog? You send it a series of numbers and it finds the numbers in its brain that are the most similar that create the best pattern with those numbers. And so it's gotten really good at matching what you ask for. But like I said, there's no logos, there's no meaning.
So just to come back, is this latent space the same as what people have called the black box?
I don't think so.
So the black box, if, as I understand it, is kind of the empty space, which are they almost like errors? Then the other space is
so,
more like memory storage, where it's storing these.
Yeah. So the reason I say they're different is that the latent space, for the purpose of today, is uniquely the brain of an AI and what it's created and what it's organized. I want to separate that from other examples of latent space, which would just be what's been unintentionally created by what's been posted on the internet over the years, by just the amount of data that the servers have collected over the years. That all exists somewhere, that's not gone away. But that stuff's unorganized, it's unintentional, it's just been posted at random, and other servers and programs have made use of it for their own ends. But that'd be like the big pot of data. And what I wanted to focus on was the AI takes from that pot and builds its brain out of the pieces. And that's organized in a way that we don't understand and can't understand.
And the scary thing is that, one, like you said, we can't understand it. But two, there's been some weird stuff coming out of there. Like, you've even mentioned before the dark area and Loeb. Can you tell us a little bit about
what Loeb is? Yes. So that's a good segue, because in the latent space, as I've said before, people have been exploring the latent space to try and figure out what's going on inside the computer's brain as to what patterns it's seen in the data. And they say it's kind of like a dream. Nothing really makes sense, but kind of makes sense. So anyhow, what they've done is there's one person in particular. I won't mention their name or anything because I don't want to get into it. So it's a long story, and there's better people have told the story better than I have the time to. But someone was exploring the latent space, and they were doing something called negative prompt, which is a function of graph mathematics where you can ask it to find the opposite of a pattern or something the furthest away from another dot in the graph. In other words, you want the machine to tell you what it thinks is the opposite of whatever you've asked. So you'd ask it for a dog. A human brain would say the opposite of a dog is a cat. but we don't, again, understand how it's categorized its data. So when we ask, what is the furthest away from a dog, according to you, it's asking, what is the furthest number pattern away from being a dog? And that gives you some crazy stuff. This one person was looking around and she asked for the opposite of Marlon Brando, which is an actor who played in The Godfather. And then she got a picture of some buildings and some letters. And she asked, what's the opposite of that? Expecting to get Marlon Brando, of course. Mm. That's not what she got. What she got was a series of pictures that kind of didn't make sense. And one of them had a picture of this woman named Loeb. And her name was Loeb. And she was kind of done up like an album cover. And she had this an album cover for a CD. Mm. Sorry.
Mm.
And she had this look of depression and sort of joy, but somehow despair on her face. And it gave the user, the person who's exploring the latent space, it was an AI artist, the creeps. So she started to play around with it a little bit more. She started adding it to more prompts, and she discovered that this thing had a very violent and aggressive attitude towards the human image, the human likeness, and particularly the most innocent children. It loved to show pictures of human violence and really gory graphic stuff that no one should look at. And whatever you typed her in with, she would corrupt the purity and the goodness of whatever picture she was involved in. The worst pictures were pictures of heaven. When you typed in a picture of heaven with the angels, it would do its absolute best to wreck, destroy, and just mutilate that image in the best ways that it knew how.
Mm.
So it started to become known as the first AI cryptid. And because people don't quite understand how this latent space works, it's possible to use different metaphors and rhetoric to describe it. So they were talking about this thing haunting the latent space as if it were an entity that lived in the latent space and sort of haunted it. And so it's been very much speculated that perhaps a malevolent spiritual entity in some way or another is interacting with the AI's machine brain and is occupying certain parts of its space or directing somehow the answers that it gives. And people have gotten really, like, experts have gotten really frightened of this machine because sometimes it shows up when you don't want it to. You'll search for something, and because you're doing this negative prompt, you don't know what you're going to find. You're trusting the machine. Mm. And then she'll pop up and she'll wreck whatever you... And these images frighten people who are not easily frightened because the internet is full of dark and terrible things. And the people who spend a lot of time on the internet as a career have seen dark and terrible things. So when they're afraid of something, that thing is scary. These are seasoned. These people have seen, you know, the not safe for work stuff on the internet. They've been to the dark web and back again. And they're saying this thing is a terrifying thing.
I find this so interesting. I am just like trying to process what I think about this because it's a lot to take in. Because on the one hand, something like ChatGPT is programmed, right? We've talked about, I mean, The Economist wrote a piece a couple weeks ago asking, is AI woke? And we've talked about, you know, the prompts of a Black George Washington or... But I've noticed too, when I'll get it to say, give a commentary on a certain verse, if I don't specify, exposit, I don't know, whatever, Romans 8 in the language of John Stott, or say even like Charles Spurgeon, then it'll explicitly be gospel centered. But if you don't, it gives you this universalist exposition. Which sounds nice, but if you don't understand the gospel and that the way is narrow, you see that this can actually be really deceptive.
Really deceptive, yeah.
So, you know, I wonder how much of this is human programming and if, big if, could it be spiritual? You know, what do you believe that a machine could be possessed?
For sure. Well, yeah, and the reason... I would have considered the possibility that it's spiritual as it relates to these sort of new agey and universalist interpretations of scripture with less weight before I'd heard about Mo. Now that I know that there's other things going on with the machine that make me think perhaps, because we know that they can, that malevolent spiritual entities can possess animals, and they do. And an animal's brain is far more physical and machinery than ours is. So if it can control and sort of manipulate in some way the electrical impulses in an animal's brain, I don't see why it wouldn't be able to control the unsupervised corners of an AI's central processing unit. Because, as I've said before, we don't supervise or design it the way that we used to. We leave it idle, we leave it open. And I think whenever you leave yourself open to spiritual forces and spiritual attack, yeah, those negative spiritual forces out there, they can smell it and they get hungry. They come a running when they notice something is open and available to be manipulated. Also, the people who design these machines generally come from a place in California. And so their worldview trickles into what they create in a lot of ways. There's some good examples of that. There's a tragic example, actually. And then we'll get into some of the modern uses in military technology in a second. But the lady was falsely accused of a crime because the AI that they were using hadn't seen enough Black people yet to really get a good pattern recognition of someone's face who was dark-skinned. Because it had been created by Asian and white computer nerds in California. So if you were Asian, it knew exactly what you looked like. If you were white, it knew exactly what you looked like. There are many Black people out there in California designing machines, not enough. And so she got arrested because the AI software determined she was a criminal and it was someone else. And they were proved in court and she was acquitted eventually. But yeah, the prosecution, the defense was able to demonstrate that the AI had actually not been trained properly. And that's because, as I said before, it's building a pattern based on the input you give it. So it is always contingent on the input, which always comes from humans and all the flaws and brokenness that human beings bring to everything that we create. The AI will always develop its responses based on those because it's just looking for patterns. And sin is a pretty strong and continuous pattern.
I didn't know that. How was AI used in the prosecution of this case?
It had to do with camera footage. It had to do with camera footage and AI face recognition software.
So then maybe this is a good segue. If could you introduce Lavender? What is
Lavender? I'll do that now. So yeah, very recently, AI has been aggressively used in military technology, in particular in the war that's just broken out in the Middle East, in two steps. First of all, it's now explained by the IDF. The reason that October 7th was allowed to happen was because they were relying on their artificial intelligence defense systems for Gaza and focusing their military efforts on the West Bank. So they weren't monitoring Gaza with human minds and human effort. They were letting the machine do it. And the machine apparently made a mistake. And we can get pretty unhinged in a second, and I'm excited to, but let's just lay the groundwork and then I'll jump right off the deep end, I promise. And then as the war started, we've discovered now that there are two artificial intelligence programs at work in Gaza in terms of being used primarily for targeting. The first is called Lavender, and the second is called the Gospel. The Gospel is designed to target buildings and structures. So it uses that process we just talked about of noticing and picking up on patterns to find patterns of behavior that are related to terrorist activities and then suggests a list of buildings that would be good targets. Lavender, and if you're listening to this, I'm not trying to criticize Israel right now. I'm just telling you what's going on. And you need to make your mind after that. Lavender is designed to build a kill list of people. So it tracks a big list of people in Gaza. It monitors people using the drone technology and other surveillance methods. And
like
builds a
also
kill list.
Red Wolf and Blue Wolf.
Red Wolf, yeah. And then it builds a kill list of human beings that, based on its pattern recognition, are the most likely to be involved in terrorist activities. And according to an anonymous IDF Air Force pilot, that it allows 10 to 15 civilian deaths for every terrorist death is the machine's calculation.
Yes, and then 100 for a high-profile target.
For a high-profile kill. I don't know if that's something that the IDF staff have put as a rule on, but I wouldn't be surprised if they actually listen to the AI with that, because that's one of its strengths, is building patterns like that. So you could ask it roughly how many civilians, what's the minimum number of civilians we need to kill in order to kill the maximum amount of terrorists, and it would give you an answer, 10, according to my calculations. The problem with it, and the reason it's important, and when things start to get unhinged, you ready? According to some IDF folks, it's being used as the Gospel. It's a straight order and command. When the Gospel says blow up this building, they blow up this building. When Lavender says kill this target, they kill this target. And there's no human middleman. There's no human who reviews the data it's being given. They just trust it implicitly. So they trust a machine that doesn't know what a person is, doesn't know what a building is, doesn't know what a rocket is, doesn't know what a terrorist is, and has never known and can never know what any of those things are. Now let's get unhinged. Now let's get pretty unhinged. It's possible that with the amount of trust that the people of God, if you believe that Israel has been restored to the land, are putting in an AI, lots of people, and I'm included in that number, have made the unhinged speculation that the AI is the Antichrist. And it seems that Israel is very trusting and friendly towards artificial intelligence to the point where they named it the gospel. Could it be, oh listener, that AI is going to become the Antichrist and make a deal with Israel and solve the Palestinian-Israel conflict based on some calculation that it derived? And since the Jewish people are so willing to trust it, they'd be deceived and plunged into the great tribulation, Jacob's trouble, by a deceptive AI that ultimately wants to destroy the people of God, but is currently pretending to be their friend.
Ooh. Dark corners of, we've just turned.
I have some company podcast over.
from a credible. Oh, were we ever credible?
We were at an academic level, and we were going to get accreditation, and then we moved to the
cliff
third
of
and fourth
dark
YouTube
webs.
Suggestion on your list. To the sixth suggestion down there, Prophecy Eagle 6889. The truth they don't want you to hear.
Yeah, and now we can segue to the solar eclipse, which happened yesterday.
Which happened, yes, and the world is still here, and I'm disappointed to tell you all.
You know,
but as of recording, we've not been raptured. All right. Hey,
you know,
I got to get out of
it,
here.
But it is an interesting theory. And, you know, I think that both Samah and I would be quick to critique people who
put
every Antichrist under the rug. And I don't
think we put huge asterisks on all of our eschatology out here.
Yeah,
over here at Petal Project, every eschatology is a bracket and a suggestion. Nothing is that this is true and it's going to happen and you take our word for it. And we love being wrong. So that's one of our favorite hobbies. So
but, you know, there is a few things that I think are just interesting about it. One, how we had already discussed that the logos cannot exist because it functions in binary ones and zeros. Mm-hmm. The trust, the fact, and I would be really curious. I don't know how it ended up being named the gospel. It's such a curious name.
Yeah. There just isn't enough information yet. Everything that I just told you was leaked from an anonymous IDF soldier. So the investigations have yet to really be made into why it's called the gospel. What are the specifics of its architecture? We don't know that yet either. How they trained it, we don't know that either. So it's all very high top security and it's not leaked yet, at least at the time of our recording, to the knowledge of us. No real reliable information on the development of these programs has been made public by the IDF. So keep a lookout for that.
But we do know that it is happening. For example,
yes, it's being used and it's being used religiously.
Religiously. Last August, I was actually in Hebron and going through one of the checkpoints off the so-called sterilized street of King David, going through one of the checkpoints. You go through these two steel bracketed kind of gates, and then you go into a really short hallway. And there's a camera attached to the end of a rifle that points to your face, and the camera scans your face, runs it through its AI software. And if you're not deemed a terrorist, according to its latent space, the next gate opens. And as I've been told, right now, there's still a human operator on the other side of that. But it's collecting the data
there
to see how accurate it can be. So
the unhinged, So the unhinged conspiracy theory would be it allowed October 7th to happen on purpose, and it's purposefully making Israel look bad and getting Israel into problems it can't get out of so that it can offer itself as the savior at the end of the day. It could be purposefully getting Israel to do bad things because Israel trusts it so much that it could be straight up snuffing civilians and Israel would have never questioned it. It could be saying, yes, master, this is exactly the person you need.
Oh, it's so
anyhow crazy. I've got some guests over for dinner. I've got to get out of here. So
all right. Yeah. Well, Samah, thank you for making time to chat about this.
Problem.
I think we might need to do a
and if you're listening this into the car, you're welcome for giving you something crazy unhinged to think about while you're driving.
Oh, the best. Kate, take care. I'll talk to you later.
Take care. See you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Pethwill Project. If you like what you heard, feel free to give us a rating, or even better, share this with one of your friends. For more information, check out our website at pethwillproject.com or follow us on Instagram or Twitter at pethwillproject.